Jackie, you brought up something during the break. Did you want to come up and share? This is an example of how the heart image is not limited to religion.
Parker Palmer has a new book out called The Heart of Democracy, where he healing the heart of democracy, where he says that the heart, in order to move on and to heal it, in order to heal itself in the first place, has to break. You got it?
Hold it. Is the microphone on?
Just I'm as close as I can get without eating it. Okay. The heart has to be broken, not smashed into pieces, but broken open in order to heal from within, in order to see what is really within the heart, in order to move on. And I just finished reading that book when my 13-year-old granddaughter came back from New York where she'd been visiting. She knew nothing about the book or what I was reading. But she brought me, she'd been to a rock shop, not rock and roll shop, stones things. Anyway, she brought me back a heart which was made out of some composition, maybe vanadium, very bright silver, beautiful. And it was cracked open, and in the middle of it, it was filled with lovely little crystals, all sparkling when the light touched it. And I thought, my, there must be a field out there because she has tapped right into what I've been studying. Here is a concrete example of what the heart looks like when it is not smashed open to pieces, but simply cracked open so it can evolve, so it can move on in the world. And this book by Parker Palmer is simply talking about how we can embrace the otherness in everybody and so heal our nation and heal our feelings towards our neighbors so that democracy can work as it was meant to work, through the heart.
Thank you, Jackie.
I'll just add to that that there's a Leonard Cohen song that goes, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets through.
Yes, I've heard that. Thank you. All right, so we've been talking about the challenges, and now we're going to look at the challenges that I talk about in Chapter 3. And these now are the challenges that all humans face. So human challenges. And our question will be, how does faith help us with these challenges? And the first answer will be, it does not remove them. It simply shows us or equips us with a way of living with them. So the first challenge is one that's very obvious. It's that everything changes and ends. And in Buddhism, this is called the principle of impermanence. And during the break, I was talking to someone who was taking care of her grandchild. And then for... How long had you been taking care of?
9 months.
9 months.
9 months.
And then the parents
went back to work, and I was crying every day for 2 weeks.
She's giving us the answer to what you do with the changes and endings. You bring them into grief. So the noticing, the accepting. To accept the fact of the impermanence would be a yes to the impermanence, to the changes and endings. And then from the acceptance, you go to the grieving. You'll be sad that something has ended. You'll be angry that it was taken away from you. and you'll be afraid that it may never come back. It's just a normal human reaction to a loss or to a change, to the recognition of impermanence. And we resist the grief. We have a whole society based on resisting grief. We don't want to go there. And that would be the equivalent of not accepting the given of life, that everything is has a beginning, middle, and end on this mortal plane. So what would be the response of faith? Well, for instance, the accepting, we see this responded to in two ways. One, in the prayer, "Thy will be done." Thy will simply means reality. Let reality happen. That's "Thy will be done." And let me find a way to accept whatever the reality is and to be with it. Because something in this reality, now we're coming to the response of faith. So I'm accepting this reality, and there's something in the reality that offers me an opportunity for saying yes. There's something in this reality that is a grace, as you just said, the crack in everything. He's quoting Emerson. Emerson said, "There's a crack in everything God has made," and then he added, "And that's how the light comes through. The light is the grace." So we have "Thy will be done," and we have Jesus saying, "Not my will, but thine be done." So we have two examples of the acceptance. And then when it comes to the grief, we have Jesus looking out at the city of Jerusalem at night from a hilltop. And this is what he says. "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often would I have gathered thee up as a mother hen gathers her chicks, but you pushed me away." So that's his grief. Then we see the grief in Mary at the foot of the cross, holding the body of Jesus, the Pietà, Michelangelo, and she's sitting there in the grief. She's feeling the sadness of the loss, but she's not coming across with judgment or retaliation. She's just accepting the reality. So faith has very specific ways of entering into the acceptance and showing us a model for it, and ways of being with the reality of impermanence and giving us the models of grief. And most of us avoid the grief in every way we can, and most of us also want to stay away from the acceptance and certainly from the impermanence. I want everything to stay the same. Recently, a friend that I work with, and she has always worked at this place since I came on board. She was there long before. And she told me, "Well, I'm going to be retiring as of next year." I went into a funk. It lasted for 2 or 3 days. And I said to myself, I shared with her also, because she also has a Buddhist path. I said, "The central Buddhist teaching, I still haven't accepted the fact of impermanence. like, you're not going to be here permanently. I'll still be working here. You won't be here. I don't like it. And it's wrong of me to try to stop you from doing what you need to do, so I can't do that. But I need to sit in the grief of it and just let it be. I have to accept the change, and I have to grieve it and move on and be okay with it. Because we still remain friends, but we just won't be in the work situation together. See what I mean? So even something like that has a grief connected to it. So you want to ask yourself, every time you go through a change, what in this do I need to grieve before I enter the go dimension? Yeah.
I never say anything publicly, so
but speaking of grief, I've always had great health, and I have a lot of energy despite my weight and being strong. And the last 5 months, I had 3 surgeries. My spine has been discovered to be a mess. There's just a list of things. I can't. Whose body is this? You know. But, and I even at one time felt like just ending it. I wouldn't, but ending it because I could no longer weed. Well, that was a thought that got me to really laugh about it, and see how ludicrous that was, and to realize what was going on. What I needed to do was grieve the loss of my body as it had been in my mind and always been, and to really do that. And somehow just having that realization, I experienced a lightness of being about it and just said, okay, sometimes I use a cane, all right, get out of my way, or whatever. I have Welsh humor. And it really was helpful. And bear with me another moment, but when you talked about Abraham, not to be grandiose, I realize I'm also home in a character in Homer, that, you know, we all are, that I'm on this thing, and in this time in my life, all this cluster of stuff has happened that's incomprehensible to me. How could this be going on? And that also made me go, I have to go. I have to move on. I have to change my view of myself, and not just let go, but go forward, and that takes acceptance, and I think the grieving enables that, not just going to a new land, but there's much more to it, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
That it's, yeah, okay, that's all.
Thank you. That was very helpful. And I like the combination you just brought up about let go and go. Like, you can't just go, you have to let go first. And then the go can kick in.
Gloria?
Hi. Well, I wanted to share something because I went through this exact same thing, piece by piece by piece.
Maybe a little louder.
Oh, okay, okay. I went through this exactly as you put on the board. And it was around my daughter, and there had been an estrangement for like 2 years. And I kept up with what I wanted to do, what I always did at Christmas and birthdays, because that, I believed that was what I wanted to do, with no expectations.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just so mind-blowing. It was not, I don't like that term. It was so painful. And I knew on my own values that I couldn't just forget what happened. I mean, it was just wrong or whatever, no response. And then I kept working on myself. I kept going on the inner after I had the grief process, and I was tend to be devotional, and I realized meditation has helped me so much with this, because it's helped me to go inward, and to me that's where it is for everything. And then outward, inward, and then outward. And so I kept using that prayer, I'm sorry, I love you, forgive me. And so I had a friend of mine, Ida, and we went down to where she works, and I took my granddaughter's 16th birthday gift and some Easter gifts. And my ex-husband works there, so I had no idea what I was going to run into. But I was okay with if she, whatever happened, if he came out and I just didn't know what would happen. And so I went in there, into the office, his company, and she goes, "Hi, Mom." Comes over and hugs me, invites me into the office. It was miraculous. And she had gone through something very, very traumatic. And so I guess what I'm saying is the grief part was hard. The anger was hard. The human part is hard. But for me, my faith and my acceptance has been learned through Al-Anon. And so they've integrated themselves into my faith. So thank
you. Okay, well, thank you. It's good to get very specific examples of how this all works. And I had one last quote from St. Paul, 2 Corinthians, referring to Christ. In him, there was only yes. Yes to what? Yes to all the human challenges. So now we can come to our definition of humility. And the word humility comes from the Latin word humus, which, as you know, means earth, soil. The one who recognizes he's from the soil and will go back to it, that's the humble one. The one who recognizes that this whole visit here to this planet is about changes, and he says yes to everyone. In him, there was only yes. Yes to what? Yes to the will of God. What is the will of God? What happens? Reality. So since everything that happens brings us some kind of a grace, reality itself is holy. And every time I say yes, I'm being deeply, deeply spiritual. Yes to what? Yes to whatever my particular story unfolds itself to be. So, another one of the challenges is that every life has pain in it of some kind, psychological, emotional, spiritual. And that's a normal feature of our existence. So another given is that I will experience pain in a variety of ways. Can I accept the part that I cannot change? Can I step up to the plate and deal with the part that I can change? And can I find the wisdom to know the difference? The accepting will bring serenity. The dealing is courage. And the wisdom to know the difference. Now, when I try to know the difference, I have wisdom. How would our faith help us with this? We have the pioneer of our faith who obviously went through suffering. We have the mother, the image of the sorrowful mother. And she brought Jesus to the temple to present him. The prophet there, Simeon, told her, "Your heart will be pierced by a sword of sorrow." She said yes to this. And there's something about this yes that has a redemptive value. Hence the connection between suffering and redemption.
This question has been preying on my mind since last week as well as this week. I'm trying to understand how something...
A little loud.
I beg your pardon. I'm trying to understand or put in perspective how something as cosmic can originate in a rather indiscriminate solar system in one of the lesser known galaxies in the vastness of the cosmos, and yet what we're talking about speaks of such universality, and we, as I always consider it an infestation, are charged with delivering it throughout. I please.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Another feature, or another one of the givens, is that life will not always be fair. Life is sometimes unfair. This would be another given. And so, when something is unfair, I need to do two things. One is try to right the wrong in any way I can, that is respectful of myself and others, and grieve the loss that's in the unfairness. And grief goes with pain also. You'll notice that grief is in every one of these. And the specific response that the Judeo-Christian tradition presents is right the wrong, but without having to retaliate. So, Sermon on the Mount, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. This and the model, of course, would be the various martyrs and Christ himself.
I have a question. Can you tell me the difference, if there is a difference, between fairness and justice?
It seems like they're used interchangeably. Did you have something in mind?
No, but it is something that I come across all the time. We're looking for justice in the world. It's one of the criterions of the world Christ is looking for.
Yeah.
And yet we say at the same time, there is so much unfairness. Is unfairness exactly the same? Is justice more of a legal term? Is unfairness
justice,
a relative thing?
Justice sounds like a much bigger concept.
Yes, it does. And I was wondering, is fairness relative? It's just what we think in our minds is unfair. Is it? And it justice
very subjective.
Is absolute.
Right. Yes.
Okay. I answered my own question.
Because.
You're good.
I just had to talk it out.
Because you have to be careful that when you say unfair, you don't mean I'm entitled to special treatment. So if I don't get it, that's unfair. That would not be what fairness is about. And then finally, of the givens that I've mentioned in this particular chapter, it's the fact of our aloneness in how we have to face certain things, but we notice that we might feel alone, but there is the possibility of support, and this support comes in two ways. We can feel ourselves supported by the people in our life who care about us and who rally around us when we're having a big problem, or who want to be there with us as we go through something. So you notice that at the end of the day, you're there alone, but you have the feeling and memory of the people who've been around you that day and who are trying to help you get through whatever you're facing. So the aloneness is an illusion, but at the same time, it feels real to every person. It's a very mysterious paradox. Feel alone, you know you have to go through it alone ultimately, but yet you know you're also not alone. And then the part that religion brings in is, of course, in the recognition that you are being joined or you are being held by God, higher power. And here we go to the 23rd Psalm. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, so I walk through, just I, so he is alone. King David wrote this psalm. So I am alone. I'm walking through the valley of the shadow of death. But I notice that I don't have to be afraid, for thou art with me. Because I feel like this good shepherding presence is accompanying me. I feel accompanied as I go through my alone experience. He doesn't see anybody beside him. He just has the feeling of a presence. Where did this feeling come from? It came from a lifetime of prayer and meditation, a lifetime of faith that there's something bigger that is holding us. Psalm 138. O Lord, you have seen me and known me. Your right hand is always holding me. He had that realization, and he kept building it throughout his life. So when he got to the dark valley, he had built up a sense of another presence that's around him and supporting him. That's the advantage of a prayerful life. When you wind up in the dark valley, you won't feel alone. And it's interesting that this could even happen if you're not religious. So help me with this if I don't remember it exactly right. So this is a song from Carousel. When you walk through a storm, keep your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. That don't be afraid of the dark is a quote from King David. I will fear no evil. I'm in the dark valley, I will fear no evil. Don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark. Walk on through the wind, walk on through the rain, though your dreams be tossed and blown. Walk on with hope in your heart, and you'll never walk alone. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. The person who wrote the song has it as just having built a lifetime inner attitude of hope also makes me feel accompanied in a dark time without having to give a name to it. That shows us this must be deeply in the psyche of humanity. It's not simply a religious belief. So something about what King David picked up on is in all humans. For him, it looks like Yahweh, but for someone else, it could just look like hope. So in facing the given of how I'm ultimately alone, and that I have to face things in life alone, then I also notice that even though I have this feeling, there is support, both human and divine. And, of course, they become one, ultimately. So I want to read just a short part here on page 103. I'm in the third paragraph. and then I just want to mention this story of Emmaus. So 103, third paragraph. Faith is tested when we are confronted with apparent contradictions. In Luke chapter 24, two disciples are en route to a little town in Israel called Emmaus. And they are having a discussion because Christ was just crucified a day or so before. A few days before, I guess. And they're lamenting that this Christ was supposed to set Israel free from Roman domination. Israel was a province of Rome. And so there was a rebellious group that were, of course, trying to oust the Romans. A war would be happening in the year 70 that against the Romans, and that war would be won by the Romans, and the temple would be destroyed. But it was believed that there would be a Messiah who would lead the forces against the oppressor. They thought Jesus was that person. But he wasn't that kind of a Messiah. But instead, this Messiah was defeated and his work was destroyed. A stranger joins them as they're walking along. And he asks them why they're looking so downcast and sad. They say, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem? Haven't you heard that Jesus was crucified? He was executed by the Romans? And we thought that he would be the one to free us from the Romans." So then Jesus explains, "Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer things and then enter into his glory? Glory of a new kingdom of justice, peace, and love." On a spiritual level, and this response is an assertion of the paradoxical nature of the spiritual vision. Because the figure of death recedes and the figure of a new life emerges. Jesus' apparent defeat is actually a victory over death. And in the same way, the disciples' aloneness is really communion with him. So when they felt most alone and they were grieving, they attracted a divine companion. There's something about grief that brings in the divine companion. And I've noticed this is true with animals also. Sometimes I've been sitting on the couch in the past, sitting on the couch crying. The cat comes over and sits in my lap out of nowhere. And I had the feeling, she's trying to console me. The everything that they thought was lost is within reach and will even break bread with them. Because the story goes on to say that the two disciples were very interested in this new companion. And when they got to an inn around dinner time, they said, "Stay with us, Lord, for the evening comes." So he went into the inn with them. They sat at a table, restaurant, sat at a table. And the waiter brought over some bread and wine. And he suddenly showed himself to be Christ. They knew him in the breaking of the bread. When he broke the bread and gave it to them, they knew, this is Jesus. This isn't a stranger. So the story, it shows that there's something about being alone in the world, as the two of them felt, being disappointed, being at a low ebb. There's something about just being in that low ebb place and grieving it that invites a divine accompaniment. And then that accompaniment even nourishes you, symbolized by the sharing of the bread. This happens every day at Mass. So in that sense, Mass celebrates the end of aloneness when it's experienced as a community event rather than this is me getting graces. Okay, any other questions on this part? Because our time is about up. So let's just have one last question. Hi, Christiane.
Hi, Dave. I was pondering on the aloneness.
Yeah.
And putting the Catholic cosmic concept into it. What if we grew up with a Christianity that focused on the ever-present Christ within, the way Jesus, whenever he had problems, would withdraw and commune with the Father?
Yeah.
First, we wouldn't start being alone. Our aloneness comes from the alienation, the impossible God out there that you have to beg constantly. And
mm-hmm.
So if we put the aloneness away and at least have the awareness of a presence within that is constantly there, at least we are open during grief that we are not alone, and possibly even prompt an experience of the living God within.
Mm.
When we read about mystical experiences, we see the wonder of it. And it can happen in the worst situations. I remember watching a fascinating program on TV when the Vatican first opened its secret vaults to the recordings during the Inquisitions. Apparently they had a scribe who wrote down every detail when they executed people. And there was a 15-year-old boy that they had in solitary confinement forever. And the day of his execution arrived, and they're all sitting there, crowds waiting, expecting a terrified kid. And he had to walk up these steps and step into boiling oil. He arrived and he looked totally serene, absolutely serene, no fear, and he just walked to his death. There was absolutely no fear, and I couldn't help thinking, I think they said something, they found his writings, and he had experienced the God within, and the aloneness was not even an issue anymore, and therefore he didn't even fear death.
Mm.
And a similar experience happened to a woman named, what's her name? Immaculata, I think. She was a Rwandan woman who was locked in a bathroom for 3 days while the butchering went on, and there were 14 of them crammed in that bathroom, and she had a mystical experience. And this, the knowing was so strong that even though going out could be death, she no longer feared it, you know. And she's part of the I Can Do It tour and talks about it. But it happened during Rwanda. But what I'm saying is, what if we had a cosmic Catholic faith from the beginning? I think we would be able to face life in a different way, with this awareness that we were never alone to start with.
Mm.
And it could change everything.
Yes.
You know, so anyway,
make a big difference.
What I wanted to share.
Well, thank you for telling us about that. Yeah. And I'll just mention one final thing, because this is so interesting, and picks up on what Christiane brought in, that when Christ was on the cross, he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why do I feel so alienated, isolated, and alone now? I was always in contact with you. I was always praying to you. I was always doing everything that the Jewish law says I should do. Why aren't you with me now? He's felt abandoned. He felt alone. And interest, this is very fascinating. The words, why have you forsaken me? He was quoting Psalm 22. And look, it's only one away from the 23rd Psalm. He could have said, I'm in the valley of the shadow of death, and thou art with me. But he went to the other Psalm, the one before that, which says, my God, why have you forsaken me? It's as if he wanted to show that he had joined us in the worst forsakenness we could ever feel, and say it is okay to feel this and not to have access to the 23rd Psalm, which says, oh, I feel that you're with me. He's saying it's okay at times that you feel the absence of God rather than the presence. Because look, here am I feeling it and showing you that it's still okay. Isn't that a beautiful realization? Thank you all.